All right, it's Friday. What a week for everybody in every direction. What a strange week this has been. I'm Bill, that's Wendy. If you want to chime in, 312-981-7200, call us or text us. Hi, Wendy.
Good morning, Bill. I couldn't wait to talk to you today. And Steve Bertrand.
Wasn't it yesterday? I found myself so riveted toward this.
I know.
There were things that I needed to do yesterday, and I could not tear myself away.
Couldn't either. There were some breaks. So that's when I got things done.
Yeah.
But I did time things around that, you know, because Brett Kavanaugh took the stand two-ish, a little after two, but I was ready to roll.
Yeah.
What do you make of this?
Hard to say. It keeps changing, you know? I think from a distance, as you look at this thing and you try to separate yourself for a second, it comes down to one person seems to be telling the truth and one person seems to be lying.
Someone's lying.
And it's very hard to decipher who is telling the truth and who is lying.
My take on their testimony, when I watched Dr. Christine Blasey Ford, I felt for her.
Yeah.
I believed her.
Yeah.
And then I waited. I didn't even try. I kept an open mind.
Yeah.
Then Brett Kavanaugh comes up. And, Bill, I have to tell you, during his testimony, I believed him.
I'm with you all the way. And didn't you start to doubt yourself?
Yes.
Going, oh, wow. I bought her story 100%. And now he comes in. And he had the same kind of attitude that if I were in his place, that same kind of rage of, hey, what are you doing? I'm a respected guy, and you're making me out to be a horrible person. He had that.
And you think about if this is not factual, what she's saying, his whole life, this will never be forgotten.
Right.
Then when he was questioned, that's when I started to change my mind a little bit on him. He was defensive, which I understand.
Yeah.
He seemed disrespectful at times, and just some of the questioning, have you ever passed out from drinking? Stall. Well, I fell asleep. I didn't black out. Well, I think falling asleep is passing out from drinking sometimes, too. I feel he wasn't honest with his answers and diverted the answers.
We know for a fact that he enjoys beer.
And that's fine. Yeah, I know.
Because he said it over and over and over again, that he liked beer then, he likes beer now. That I gave him, okay, that's good. I'm glad you enjoyed beer. He also kept doing this thing where anytime anybody would talk to him about the circumstances that would happen to him or not, after drinking so much of his beloved beer, he would then try to turn it on them. He did that a couple of times.
Give me an example.
They would say, what happens to you when you've had too much? What happens to you when you have too much beer? He would, you know, he kept doing that.
And I know that he is an attorney. I know that he's a judge, but he wasn't on the bench. And I feel that he was snapping back. Listen, I get it. If this isn't true, he's going to do everything in his power to prove it to not be true.
And he should.
So why not let the FBI investigate
right.
it? Right. Why not, you know, this Mark Judge, I know a letter came last night because the judge read it today where Mark Judge is saying, I don't recall Brett Kavanaugh ever acting like this. You can use this letter and it can be a felony if I'm lying, but that's not the same as being interviewed. And if he is 100% innocent, which he claims he is,
bring Mark Judge in.
Make it be an investigation. Prove to everyone.
Right.
Clear your name.
Yeah, Steve.
Sheldon Whitehouse is a Democrat. He's a
Love
Democratic
his name.
Senator. But he put it in a pretty succinct way today. He said, "Can you imagine if there was a third person in the room with Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton?" That third person wouldn't be called to testify before Congress to talk about what they did or did not
sure.
see or were not a participant in.
Sure. Good
you know,
comparison.
I think that's a pretty good way to put it.
So, and that was put before the judge today, where they wanted to delay this so they could get an FBI to call Mark Judge to the stand. And again, party split. The Democrats all said aye. The Republicans all said no.
That's one of the most troubling things in the world to me.
Yes.
Is that with everything that's gone on, especially yesterday, with the testimony back and forth, that somebody wouldn't be brave enough and bold enough to split from their party. And it could be on either side. And it shouldn't just be one person. We're all human beings with the capability of understanding things. And it's so disturbing that on something this major, all Democrats would vote one way and all Republicans would vote the other way. That's just the odds of that. I mean, realistically,
we're not coming together at all. Because why wouldn't you just say, let the investigate, we'll delay this, you know, and in Kavanaugh's defense, I know he wants to get in.
Yes.
And I know his life has been upended. So has hers.
Right.
I am heartbroken for both of them. And again, as Bill mentioned, someone here is not telling the whole truth. And I'm sorry, they're under oath. What happens? How do we find out who's not telling the truth? Will we ever find out?
It's not even the whole truth. Their stories are completely different, like 180 degrees different. He doesn't put himself even at the party. In a scenario that you'd be more confused by, you go, well, if he was saying he was at the party, you go, well, maybe he was there and this happened, but he says he wasn't even, he's got calendars from his childhood, which I didn't know was a thing,
but
he's got these day-to-day detailed calendars because his dad did it. You know,
and that's when he cried. And I get that, because how embarrassing would this be to have your parents and your children and your wife there when you're being accused of sexual assault?
Sure.
And
sure.
And I just felt I don't care that a guy cries. And I know that this is a terrible thing if it's not true.
Yeah.
But those are the two times he cried. And I just sometimes I wonder, like reading body language, so defensive. This 100% didn't happen. I am innocent. And I just feel sometimes he kept referring to this list of 65 people who signed to show what great character he was. They grew up with me. They knew me. They drank beer with me because I love beer. I honestly was talking to my husband about this morning. You know, a friend that I've known since sixth grade, if something like this alleged events came up, I would sign that thing too and say the person I know would never have done
right.
that. But how do you know if you weren't in that room?
Right.
How do you know?
So
right.
we have two people who through their lives have been credible people, right? And they're
yeah.
both telling stories.
Yes.
It's an incredibly individual decision. Each of us has to decide which of them we believe, because they can't both be correct.
Correct. And sure. Yeah.
I just keep going back to the yearbook and the judge's descriptions of some of the things he wrote in the yearbook. I don't know. I think you alluded to some of that, Wendy. And it doesn't ring true. You know, when he talks about putting pieces of the night back together again, and, you know, then
right.
yesterday he said, no, I remember everything about the game. George Brett was in left field.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but for me, the most difficult thing to understand is that Renata alumni
yep.
that he puts in there, then that is also shared with what other football players in there.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then he criticized.
Well, let me just
okay.
say it. So, and he and clearly the implication is that they had some sort of sexual contact. I mean, that's what it
She's
implies.
A that's loose girl. That's what
my,
it implies.
My inference is, you know, we did Renata, and he. Said instead that was just a reference to the fact that they were good friends in high school. And then, like you said, Wendy, he turned and scolded the senator who brought it up for impugning her reputation. That's a big one for me. I have one of my best friends from high school was a girl named Linda. I would have not put in my yearbook that I was a Linda alumni. It's not
something, if she was a good friend, as he stated.
That's what I mean. And so that for me is that's a pretty big. That's sort of the most provable thing for me that, or disprovable, or whatever you want, however you want to put it. I have a hard time with that one.
And she signed. She's one of the 65 names, I believe, isn't she?
She signed, but she didn't realize that
right.
she was on this alumni
list. And how many others?
And after she was confronted with it, Wendy, she came back and said, I feel terribly for this. I think she said for this, for their daughters and things like that. She took great issue with that. She had no idea she was referred to by those boys in that yearbook.
Those tears to me, and I could be 100% off base, and this is just my opinion, those tears were guilt bringing up those 65 people that support him, his parents who support him, his wife, his two daughters, which he loves to coach, and he wants to show them that they can play basketball and live in a man's world and be treated equal. Those tears to me were tears of guilt, because it's like he's stuck with his story. At this point, he can't change his story. That is my own opinion.
Right.
It could be completely wrong, but if you have these people who believe in you 100% and in your heart you know you're wrong, that would make me cry.
Yep. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then we'll continue this discussion. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. If you want to call us or text us, we'd love to hear from you. We're talking about everything that went on yesterday and what will continue to go on today. That was for the people of Minnesota, I'm guessing.
Yes, it was.
That was fantastic. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and Wendy. We're talking about yesterday. Boy, a lot went on. We're only on for 3 hours. I think if we we started a few minutes ago talking about it. I don't think we can get it all in 3 hours.
How long was his testimony? Because hers was just a little shy of 4 hours, was it?
I don't know the exact total. I do know his opening statement was far longer than hers was. People have criticized the length of the statement. It's open-ended. You have the right to go as long as you want. He took advantage of that and made some good points. That side story about his daughter, he's painting himself and his family as being very religious. And he was talking about his daughter's 10-year-old daughter saying her prayers and wanting to include her.
Dr. Ford. That was
in
sweet.
The prayer. It was a combination of sweet and
manipulation.
Well calculated, certainly. I don't know if it was manipulative, but it was well calculated. I mean, because it really got the point across that he wanted to get across, you know.
That's when, during his testimony, I swear to God, Bill, I'm sitting there going, this poor guy.
Yeah. Well, understandably so. And then, as we mentioned, then you're second-guessing yourself, going, wow, I was 100% in her corner, but this seems very credible as well. The unraveling, for me anyway, was during the questioning portion of
it. Big time.
When things got a little strange. I also noticed on several occasions, anytime they would bring up Mark Judge, he went out of his way to paint him as a guy who was a friend a long time ago, but has had a lot of problems in his life. He even detailed some of them, a drug addiction.
Alcoholic.
As if to say, not really a credible guy. I mean, he's part of the story, but the Mark Judge you'd be talking to today has had a lot of battle wounds. He might not be that credible.
And that's just the point, that this letter that came in from Mark Judge at the 11th hour last night, saying that, you know, this is not the Brett Kavanaugh I knew. You can use this as testimony. If he was such a partier and an alcoholic, then how can you take his word either way?
Right. Absolutely right.
I mean, and Steve may know the answer to this. I certainly don't, and Bill, you may. Dennis, you had a question?
Yeah, good morning. In terms of the yearbook, how did they get the yearbook? Because it's a private item. They can't go confiscate it.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, because it's just so incredible to me that the references that we're talking about were published in the yearbook.
They were printed. They're not written in by kids.
Every yearbook published that year, to everyone in that high school had those references.
They can't go to his house and take that yearbook without somebody giving it to them.
But wait a second.
You could go to libraries, too. I believe they have those.
I'm not sure if you understood what I'm saying. What we're referring to are not inscriptions that you would write in my yearbook or I would write in yours. They are student descriptions that are in ink on each page.
You write your own thing, like I hope to be. Mine was known as Chugs in high school.
But what high school says you're the president of the Ralph Club puts that in your yearbook?
Right, and if that's put in ink, it is. Well, then you got to go back to the person that quoted that and cite it.
No, it's printed. It's not in ink. It's printed.
I understand that, but go back to the person that put that in there. What context did they mean that? I'm not defending them. I just don't understand
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting you, but the students fill out, as I would understand it, a form. What they want next to their names.
Seniors have that.
And
you
that's
know?
Why Kavanaugh was called on to say, what did you mean when you put that you were the something about boofing or things like that?
Right.
So,
in a million years did I ever think I'd hear Steve Bertrand say that.
I knew he would. I knew it would come to that at some point.
Want to do it again?
A great question, though, Dennis. Thank you very much. All right, so that's another thing we haven't even begun to look at or touch upon is some of the terminology like that one or the Devil's Triangle, that his meaning of it and the common meanings. And it's very possible that locally these were different meanings, or through time the meanings have changed.
Is it possible? I don't mean to be unfair, but the exchange when he talked about the Ralph Club and he said it was because he has a weak stomach and he...
That's a load of poo-poo.
Of boof.
Bill, it's better when Bertrand says it.
He referenced, you know, not like having only spaghetti on his pasta because he had a weak stomach.
Right.
And yesterday I was, as you mentioned, glued to the radio or the TV. I had some errands to run. I was with my 15-year-old son. We were listening to it. And one of the questions also was, did you ever, after a night of drinking, did you ever wake up with less clothes on than you had before? And he said, no. And my son Dylan is like, even I've done that. Sometimes in my sleep, I guess I get hot and take off something. How could you know? I just, some of these things, either they were averted, the answers were averted directly, or when I had trouble believing him.
But you understand why, right? Because the allegation from Blasey Ford is that he was very drunk.
Yes, inebriated.
And that she heard him, you know, careening down the stairs. So if he allowed for testimony that he ever was drunk or did drink too much, then that opens the door for that possibility that he might not remember it. And so I'm sure that's why he was especially guarded when it came to this question.
Sure. But that's lying to me, I think. It sounds like he partied quite a bit. Does it not?
It's
okay. That's why I wish he would just say, yeah.
Well, he can't. Because if he gives in even a little bit, that opens the door.
That's why he's crying. Can't. Because he feels guilty, because he knows he's not telling 100% of the truth.
Let's do this. There's just much to discuss. Why don't we do this? We'll take a quick break. We'll get you some news. Steve has the news, and then we'll continue to discuss this. What are your thoughts? What did you see? Were you swayed by anything that was said or done yesterday? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I know that Brett Kavanaugh likes beer. I got to be honest with you, I like Krispy Kreme. I do. And Krispy Kreme Donut celebrates National
Great
Coffee
Day. Great transition, by the way, Wendy. Great transition.
I saw you put down a Krispy Kreme, too.
That was fantastic.
Free coffee any size tomorrow, Saturday, September 29th, because it's National Coffee Day and Krispy Kreme is celebrating. Krispy Kreme Donuts in Chicagoland announces coffee fans can grab a free any size iced or hot coffee, National Coffee Day, tomorrow, Saturday, September 29th. No purchase necessary, but you might want to get an original glaze because they're awesome.
All right, we're trying to make sense out of what we saw and heard yesterday. Two very different opinions of what took place at a party years and years ago. What are your thoughts? 312-981-7200.
Dan has called us. Hey, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Bill and Wendy. I watched and listened for most of it while working at home yesterday, and I really went at it with an open mind. And when, you know, I got through Mr. Kavanaugh's soliloquy just fine, and I knew that he was going to be charged with emotion and trying to be strong, and that was all good. But when he started to answer the questions in a very swarmy way by asking questions back at the person asking the questions, that's when things got a little off track for me, when he asked the interviewers or interviewees if they like beer or if they drank too much. That just seemed very inappropriate. And when he would dance around, it almost seemed like Donald Trump answering questions at a press conference with other questions and kind of talking over the actual issue. That's when it got a little odd for me.
I'm with you all the way.
When you become that defensive, in my opinion, and I could be totally wrong, it means you're guilty of something. When you're that defensive, you're lying.
Yeah. If you're not answering the questions with a simple answer, which is all that they asked for, then you are casting doubt upon yourself. No one else is doing that at that point. It's you by default putting yourself in that position. So thanks for the discussion. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank
absolutely.
You, Dan.
I won't go as far as you just did and say it means you're guilty of something. It's a strange tactic. At that point, after making that long opening statement, and making a lot of people who may not have believed him start to believe him, myself included, where you go, wow, this is exactly how I'd be reacting if I were sitting where he was. it was just a very bizarre tactic to take.
And such a turn. Haunting.
Yeah.
It's like a personality change. And, you know, some of the questioning was, you know, getting belligerent when you're drunk. I don't know. He kind of demonstrated that and wasn't drunk. He yeah. became belligerent.
Yeah.
He really did. And I know he's an attorney. I know he's a judge, but he wasn't sitting on the bench. So I just wonder, had he been in a courtroom, which I know this isn't a trial, although it seemed like one, if someone talked back at him like that, would he have let that fly in his courtroom?
I'd be shocked if he did.
I don't know. Mary has a comment or a question. Mary, how are you?
Hi, good. Thanks for taking my call this morning. I did watch the entire hearing yesterday. I, as one of you mentioned, it was riveting. I just couldn't break away from it. And I did find both Dr. Ford and Judge Kavanaugh compelling. The fact that sticks with me, which I don't think I've heard mentioned yet this morning, is that Dr. Ford's best friend in high school, and I think continues to be a friend now, Leland Kaiser, signed a sworn statement that was submitted to the committee under penalty of law that she did not know Judge Kavanaugh, never met him, nor was she at the party that Dr. Ford is talking about. And I do know the question came up to Dr. Ford about this, and she said, well, of course she might not remember a random party because nothing traumatic happened to her. But the points in Leland Kaiser's statement that stick with me is that she doesn't know Judge Kavanaugh and never met Judge Kavanaugh. And I know everyone's focusing on why doesn't Mark Judge talk. Maybe he's got a reason for that. But, I mean, what do you do with her best friend's statement, who she puts at the party, who says she doesn't know Judge Kavanaugh and never met him? That's the point that really sticks with me in this.
I think that'd be a good question for the FBI, too.
It'd be a great question for the FBI. Here's my attempt.
Judge Kavanaugh has already been through so many investigations, and how did not one person in his background bring this up?
Mary, here's a quick attempt to explain it, at least in part. Mm-hmm. When I was in high school, I probably attended, in the 4 years I was in high school, well over 100 parties. I'd say maybe close to 150
animal.
Parties. With that said, I didn't drink at all, not a lick in high school. And my memory is fantastic. I don't know too many people who have a better memory than me. I can't mm-hmm. tell you what happened at most of those parties. I can't tell you who I met. I can't tell you who I talked to. I can't tell you who was where and who said what to who. And I have a great memory, and I didn't drink at any of those parties. So it's very possible. Go on.
Somebody as well known as Judge Kavanaugh, if I knew somebody who had gotten as far as he has in his career with his service and being on the federal court, I would remember that I had met him in high school. And I would say, oh, gosh, yeah, I knew him in high school.
Or even I was at a party with that guy, not that I ever met him.
But the version that she met or would not have been at a party was a teenager who you could never earmark for that sort of stardom, so you wouldn't really register a guy like that, would you?
Yeah, I think you would.
I would, because I would go, I think I was at a party with Monty Hall once he became Monty Hall. I think you'd go, oh, yeah, it was that guy. I think you would remember that.
And so this, her statement, I mean, it's under penalty of law, and you know, they have evidence, like her evidence, her best friend doesn't even remember ever meeting him, even if she wasn't in the room.
Well, maybe she didn't meet him. That could be true.
It's very possible.
You're at a party and maybe she didn't see him.
She also said she doesn't know him.
Well, why would you? You know, there's people I've been at parties with that I don't know.
With four people at a party or five people, that's kind of tough.
Right. No, I will admit to that.
I asked you that off the air.
Yeah.
Why is the friend not corroborating Dr. Ford's story?
If you're sitting in a living room with four or five people chatting, and your best friend, who's the only other girl who's there, I don't know. It just seems kind of odd to me. And please don't get me wrong. I've got daughters. I've got sons. I feel for both of these people.
It's absolutely.
It's tragic. It is absolutely tragic what's happening here with our country. And I don't know, that point that her best friend isn't corroborating in any way the story or her explanation, and I go to, they could both be telling the truth. And perhaps Dr. Ford, and I know people are going to get upset with this, but perhaps it was somebody else. I don't know. I wasn't there.
Mary,
but
that's what I kept thinking. But let me just ask you a question, because I've thought this through so many times. If someone put their mouth or their hand over my mouth to muffle me and attack me in some way, I got to tell you, I'd never forget that person.
Yeah. You know, that's a good point. Again, I go back to her friend's point. Her
it is weird.
Her friend's statement. So, yeah. And the fact that he's been through so many background checks, and as people have said, this is a small, close-knit community where if something like this happened, it probably would have spread like wildfire. Yeah, I don't know. I have no doubt something happened to her, and I feel for her. And gosh, if it were ever one of my daughters, or if one of my sons was accused of this,
yeah,
I don't know what I'd do.
The mother of a son, I have two boys. You have to look at both sides. They could be accused of something that they didn't do in the future, and who
it's
knows?
Terrifying,
now.
Mary.
It is terrifying.
Really appreciate the call. Thanks so much. You bring up some good points. Have a good rest of the week. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break, and then we'll discuss this further. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. We're joined right now by Rich Lankoff, our legal counsel, our consigliere. He's an attorney over at Bryce Downey & Lankoff, LLC. He's also host of the podcast Legal Face-Off. Thanks for being here, Rich. Where do we start from everything that went on yesterday? What's your take on it all?
Wow. I mean, where do you start? Indeed, I was watching, as we all were. It's sort of Christmas for legal analysts, right? There's so much to discuss.
Someone's lying or not.
Well, that's the thing, right? I mean, it's amazing that one of these individuals is literally lying.
Their stories
and not
aren't
just
even close.
Yeah, there's no gray area. It's not like, literally someone is making something up completely.
How will we find out who it is, and will we find out?
No.
And what happens if they are found guilty of lying?
I don't think we'll find out. I mean, listen, Clarence Thomas is on the bench now for 20 years later. You know, that it's never been reopened, that issue. I don't think this issue will, I don't think we'll get to the bottom. How would you, right? I mean, unless someone just comes out and admits that in front of the entire world, I lied. I don't think we'll find out.
One of those six people at that party, five or six or whatever it was, I believe someday this is going to come out. Not now.
Well, then there's going to be the same questions about their motivation, their credibility. I mean, one of the things that Lindsey Graham, who I did not like very much yesterday, one of the things he did say accurately, though, was there's not enough evidence to even get a warrant because of the time that's elapsed, because of the questions on credibility. Remember, Mark Judge, I mean, he's an alcoholic, right? He's a drug addict by all, recovering alcoholic. There's serious questions about his credibility. That's probably why he's not there live. We heard his statement from last night that he doesn't want to come in live. So,
because of his anxiety and depression, he doesn't want to be in front of a group of people.
Right. So even if these people do come forward later, you know, I think there are serious questions about their motivations and their credibility. So unfortunately, yeah, I don't see how we ever find out the truth.
Was Lindsey Graham scheduled to speak right there, or did he just do that on his own accord? Because the timing was perfect. Dick Durbin really made some good points right there, and it seemed to have some winning moments, and then all of a sudden it's Lindsey Graham scolding everybody for what was going on. Was that scheduled?
I believe that was scheduled. I believe it was his turn.
They go line to line, so by rank. So the highest ranking Democrat and the second highest ranking Republican back and forth.
Yeah, so I think he did take his turn in order. And, you know, if you saw right after the next senator, I think it was Whitehouse, said, do we want to take a break?
Right.
Grassley said maybe 60 seconds, and then Whitehouse went right into his questioning, which was the boofing.
Yeah.
And
it's an interesting
triangle. Three out of four people on the jury
triangle.
Said it today.
Yeah.
Not me, I'll have it be known.
All right, so with those terms, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, it would almost
call
take...
Call me after the show, I'll explain it to you.
Wendy has a 1-900 line set up that she'll explain all that to you. All right, so is it possible that those terms... have a different meaning now, or maybe regionally they mean different things, or maybe in his circle of friends they have a different meaning?
No
Is that
way.
Possible?
Hard to believe. I mean, you know, I think we all did the same thing when we heard those terms. We Googled it right away and looked at some of the context.
I didn't need
and
to Google it.
Most people, I had never heard, I mean, maybe I'm naive, I had never heard of it used in that way. I've heard of a couple other ways that they use. I think, yeah, most people, when they heard those terms, they did not interpret it to mean what Kavanaugh says it
right,
meant.
Right.
There's a whole other, you know, connotation to it that you've probably covered already. So yeah, I don't think that was very credible at all. I mean, I think it was one of the many things that Kavanaugh said that was just not believable.
His testimony, I thought, you know what? I believe him. I'm going with him. And then when the questioning started, my mind changed.
Well, what about his, I mean, what are your callers and what do you all think about just his demeanor? Let's even assume that he was telling the truth. What about this notion that his temperament, the way he acted, the angry manner in which he addressed the Senate, you know, makes him the wrong temperament for the Supreme Court? Anything to that?
If you're accused of something, I just
come out swinging. I get it.
And I just don't understand why he was asked if he would submit to a lie detector test. And he said, whatever the committee wants me to do, I'll do. FBI investigation, whatever the committee. And that's when Durbin pushed back and said, what do you want?
Right. And it froze him.
But why doesn't he just say, bring in witnesses,
sure,
do everything, go FBI, I delay this, I don't care, this is a great job opportunity, my reputation, my life is at stake, bring it on, I'm innocent.
Because
why?
He's cognizant now after 2 weeks of the pure politics of it, I think. I mean, yeah, you know, he realizes that the delay would empower the Democrats, especially if they win the midterm election. So you can't ignore the fact that that is what's motivating everyone. I mean, this whole idea that they're trying to get to justice, I think is nonsense. I think it's just politics. We all understand that the Democrats held on to it because they wanted to delay it to win the midterms. And the Republicans want to rush and not have an FBI investigation
right,
to avoid the midterms.
Right.
So they're using her as a pawn, is what people are thinking.
No question.
What does she have to gain by agreeing to this?
I don't know. I agree.
Putting her family through the ringer. Maybe they offered her tons of money. How is that worth it?
You know, it's always, you know, we've covered, obviously, the Bill Cosby story extensively. We cover a lot of similar situations on our show and on your show. And, you know, the quick answer is always, well, blame the victim and they have something to gain. And, you know, they're off after monetary gain. Trump said that this week.
Yeah.
You know, Kavanaugh said that indirectly. Yeah, I don't buy it. I don't understand why any woman would want to put themselves through this hell for 15 minutes of fame. It makes no sense. So I agree
fame.
That there's no motivation at all for her.
Listen to this text. You idiots, how would you react if your family were dragged through this? You know what? I might at this point, if I was Kavanaugh, say, when he said, this has been hell on my family, this is terrible, I would have said, you know what? It's not worth it. I'm going to withdraw my name.
Yeah, and remember, he's an experienced judge. I mean, he should be. I mean, I understand it's hell for his family. I get it. But he's been through, you know, he's been on the bench forever, right? For a long time, he's been through this process with other justices. I would imagine that he could put aside his personal issues and answer these questions objectively. That's what I would have done. I would not have brought my family into it. I understand it's personal. It's difficult. But I agree. He should have just said, I'm innocent and bring on the FBI investigation today, because it's going to reveal nothing.
And
I think the fact that he stonewalled on that was a big negative for him.
He's smart enough to know at that stage in the game, play the sympathy card.
Sure.
He made his statement. It was a very impassioned statement that
right,
made so many people start to side with him. So why do you go aggressive? Why
for
don't
sure,
you go sympathetic?
And why do you give your opponents the ammunition to say he's avoiding the investigation? I mean, he is probably correct. I mean, the FBI would not probably reveal much more than they already know.
Right.
So why not just like
just
he should not
then
be worried about the politics of it. He should say, delay it for 6 months. I don't care.
Right.
That's secondary
right,
to me
clearing
my name.
Yeah.
Let it take however long it takes. In reality, it would take a few days. You could get this done. It could have been done by now. If I was him, I would say, I don't care if I'm on the bench for the midterms. That has nothing to do with my motivation.
Right.
I want to serve the court and be a good judge and to clear my name. If it takes 2 days, if it takes 2 months, bring it on. That's what I would have said. I think the fact that he didn't do that plays into his opponent's, you know, goals.
No question.
Thank
That's
you,
Rich Lankoff.
Thank you.
He's our legal counsel. He's not proud of it, but he is. he's a lawyer over at Bryce Downey and Lankoff LLC. Also the host of our podcast at WGN Plus, Legal Face Off.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder.
Alexander Zelbin is our guest. He's the managing editor over at Decider.com. Alexander, we've not been able to speak to you the last couple of weeks. Everything good?
Everything's going great. You guys were at a baseball game and things. Sounded exciting.
Yeah, it was very exciting. It was very exciting. Speaking of exciting, I love television. We all love television, but it's hardly ever as riveting as TV was yesterday there in the as we were hearing testimony from a judge and from a doctor. What does the rest of television learn from that? What can they do to make it as exciting as real life was yesterday?
I mean, I don't know if there necessarily are any lessons to take from that. You know, something that we were talking about a little bit in the office and that I felt is we've had, and not to get too preachy, but we've had this slide where the line between politics and entertainment has narrowed so that entertainment outlets are covering these things as if it is an entertainment program, as if the Dr. Ford hearings are exactly the same thing as the premiere of Grey's Anatomy. And it's not. You know, this is a woman's real pain on display. This is the future of the country. And I think ultimately anybody who is looking at that and trying to make think, how can we, you know, get people live tweeting about it? I think they're taking the wrong lessons away, honestly.
Yep, true.
And if anything, something that I see people responding to in a very specific way, in a similar way to how they're responding to things politically 2 years ago, is they're looking for comforting things, things that offer a little bit of hope. You know, I saw a lot of people, and I did this as well, were tweeting about the Good Place premiere last night, because that's something that takes place in a complete fantasy world and posits an idea of what if we all were worked together to make things better. And that's the sort of thing that I think people want to see as a response, not something that I don't even know how you would make a more sensationalized version of what happened yesterday, to be frank.
To give you even more credence about the blurred lines between politics and you know, scripted television, so many shows that deal with either politics or a president are now stepping back going, what do we do to top what's really going on in real life? We don't know how to do that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, to talk about another premiere that came on last night, Murphy Brown came back after a really long break. And again, something that I was really wondering about going into this, they've talked about how they want to make it topical, but they're also filming it weeks, if not months in advance, and writing very far in advance of things. And things are changing not just by the day, but by the hour, by the minute at this point. So how do you create something fictionalized? And unfortunately, they had a really fun cameo on Murphy Brown. They had Hillary Clinton showed up auditioning to be Murphy Brown's secretary on the show.
That's pretty funny.
Funny.
But
and that's the running joke from the old days of Murphy Brown, is you always had celebrity guest stars playing that role. That's very funny that they do that.
Yeah, and it's great, and it's a great bit, but I didn't see anybody talking about it last night based on everything that was happening in the real world. So for better or for worse, in days where a Hillary Clinton's winking cameo where she talks about, well, I've had problems with emails in the past while she is interviewing for a job, very hilarious, very self-aware, barely anybody wrote about it. Barely anybody talked about this morning because of everything that is going on, because everything is so big in the real world. I guess the short version is people are still figuring out how to make that shift, and I don't think we're quite there yet.
All right. Well, the fact that Big Brother's finale happened and that's over with, I found myself in a TV glut, so I've been trying to fill it up with things. I do love The Voice that started for the new season. And has anyone, I guess I'm asking Bill right now, Jim Carrey's new show, Kidding, have you seen that on Showtime?
I've not seen it.
I love it.
Is it good? Yeah.
Yeah. If you haven't checked it out, Michelle Gondry, who did Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with Jim Carrey, is one of the guys behind it. It's very whimsical like that. It's a fictionalized version of a Mr. Rogers type character who suffered a devastating loss about, I think, a year before he picked up in the first episode, and how he deals with that, how he deals with being a real person, but also being somebody who has to talk to children and inspire them every single day. And as you can imagine, some cracks start to show.
I'm just one episode in. Conan O'Brien was featured on the first one. I really love it. I really do.
Jim Carrey is great on it. His performance is, I was a little worried that it would be over the top, but he really does nail Children's Host very, very well. The puppets are fun. The songs are very good.
It's really good. Bill, you love it.
You had me at the puppets are good. As soon as you said that, I went, I got to start watching the show.
And Danny Trejo makes a great appearance and is a big fan of Ukulele. Let's just leave it at that.
Alex, I didn't mean to watch this, but the other day it just happened to be on and I couldn't stop watching it. I was surprised at how good New Amsterdam was. What'd you think of it?
We are split here at the office. We like to talk about it a whole lot because, and for those of you who haven't watched the show, it's a new hospital drama set in a fictionalized version of a hospital here in New York, which is, they describe as almost its own city. So it has the hospital, but it also has living quarters. It has its own prison, which is an opportunity for a lot of different stories that they can tell. A new director played by Ryan Eggold from The Blacklist comes in and revamps the whole hospital, immediately fires the entire cardiac unit, challenges people to be better, challenges people to practice real medicine. It's the sort of thing that I think is really crowd-pleasing. To be honest, it's not exactly my cup of tea, but one of my other writers, Josh Sarakach, really enjoyed how pointed it was, and particularly Ryan Eggold's performance.
It's incredibly contrived. I mean, it's a hospital that could only exist as a television show, but I was okay with that. I bought into that. And I thought I saw one of the guys from 30-something, Peter Horton, play a little role in it. Is that possible?
I believe he might be. There's also Freema Agamon, who most people probably know from her time on Doctor Who as one of the Doctor's companions, shows up.
Yeah.
I'm really interested to see what she does because she's a great actress and she's only in the first episode a little bit. My favorite bit, though, for fans of old school ER, is that Ryan Eggold perfectly channels George Clooney's head shaking in a hospital vibe.
Yes,
I enjoyed.
Yeah,
gotta watch that.
I think you'd love it. I mean, like I said, it's so contrived, and you go, "Well, that would never happen in a hospital." And they've done this thing where they show you one by one by one by one all the problems each of the characters has. You know, it was textbook script writing. You know, here's a guy you think is flawless. Oh, wait a minute, he's got this going. There was a lot of that kind of thing.
I gotta see that.
But I don't know, somehow it worked. Wendy and I both sampled Manifest, by the way, the other night.
I loved it.
This is the time travel, the airplane that gets lost for 5 years. What do you think of that one?
Same sort of thing, where it's definitely like, if you're a fan of Lost, it's very clearly going for that. My feeling, I don't know if you remember, right after Lost hit big, there were a ton of TV shows that tried to ape the format.
Sure.
And be a little like it. It definitely feels like if it had come out then, I would not have been surprised. But the cast is really strong. You got Melissa Roxburgh in it, Josh Dallas from Once Upon a Time, Athena Karkanis, and a few other recognizable faces in there. It definitely has the weird mysteries going. With a lot of these shows, I feel like it depends on how much they drag out their mysteries versus how much they start revealing the information. And as long as they start revealing a lot more information starting with the second episode, I think it'll be good to go.
Yep, absolutely. Alexander Zalbin is our guest, managing editor of Decider.com, a great website if you're a fan of television or entertainment. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy, and we're speaking with Alexander Zalbin, managing editor of Decider.com. Alexander, seeing promos for Saturday Night Live, can't wait for the premiere. I'm like, when are they going to show who's really going to be on? The hosts for the premiere, Kanye West and Adam Driver, and I thought it was a rerun because it seems like Adam Driver was just on.
No, it's really being hosted by Adam Driver in the return. The musical guest is Kanye. The interesting bit that came out today was originally it was actually supposed to be Ariana Grande, but as people may or may not know, there's a lot of life stuff that she's going through right now, and because of that, she did not feel emotionally ready to go and be the musical guest on the show, so Kanye jumped in to take the lead there.
Life stuff meaning getting married and Well, I don't know what.
Well,
her...
she's getting married, but also her ex boyfriend.
Oh yeah,
Mac Murray. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, so she decided to opt out.
That was a good move.
All right, a couple questions. Question number one: the Kavanaugh story is the biggest story going on in the country right now, so it needs to be addressed on Saturday Night Live. But how do you make fun of this, of a woman being sexually molested, essentially, if that happened? How do you, if you're Saturday Night Live, how do you address that?
This is a frequent refrain that I saw on Twitter yesterday, you know, where people were armchair quarterbacking the Saturday Night Live premiere and trying to decide how they should handle it and saying, oh, it'd be great if this happened, great if this happened. Oh, they got to get Mark McKinney to play Kavanaugh. They got to get Bob Odenkirk to play Kavanaugh. But as you said, any of it feels very grim. Personally, I would say you almost avoid Ford completely because that is too hot button of a topic. Yeah. And instead, concentrate on Kavanaugh. He spent an hour-ish, you know, yelling at people and interrupting people.
And it's the I like beer water. Is going to come up, I bet. Mm-hmm. I like beer.
Mm-hmm.
I like beer.
Exactly. Yeah, so you could do that. You could also, Alec Baldwin is definitely coming back as Trump, so certainly you could do avoid the hearings entirely and instead have somebody as Kavanaugh interacting with Trump. I think there are ways around it, but I do think the thing that they really need to be careful about is avoiding Ford as much as possible.
Maybe you'll see a joke or two during Weekend Update. Maybe you won't see a scene play out because that would be really, I mean,
it's
I know they want to be cutting
it's
edge.
It's so sensitive
but, yeah,
right now.
It's tough.
I mean, next week maybe, but I feel like it's such a sensitive topic on both sides.
Yeah. Adam Driver's a strange choice to be the host for the first show of the year. Normally, whoever's the host of the very first show is like a total A-lister with something huge coming up. Why do you think they went with Adam Driver?
Well, first of all, he's a surprisingly good host.
He was great.
Back when he was on before, he was fantastic. It's possible it might tie in, too. He was just in Black Klansman from Spike Lee,
right.
And he got a lot of really good notice for that. So it's possible it might be a rev up to an Oscar campaign to keep him kind of in the eye there. He also has The Man Who Killed Don Quixote is coming out. But again, I think it probably just comes back to they like him and they wanted somebody who was a big star to come back for the premiere.
And only one cast change, right, from last year, I think?
There's been a bunch of behind-the-scenes changes. But yeah, I believe I'm forgetting
Luke
her name.
Null is gone.
Oh,
one of the featured players. He's no longer
Null
there.
Null and Void.
Null and Void. Very, very nice. And yeah, there's a new woman has been added, but her name escapes me as well. And that's,
yeah.
I think that's the only thing on screen we're going to see different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, behind the scenes, there's been a bunch of changes. Colin Jost and Michael Che, as well as a third guy, are now head writers on the show. So that should potentially change the tone of the show a little bit.
No Piscopo, though, right? No Piscopo?
He's back.
He is back.
In a big way, hosting every
news.
Show.
Good.
Yeah,
that's good for America. Alex, great to talk to you. Thank you so much. We look forward to this again next week.
Yeah, thank you guys so much.
It's Alexander Zalbin. He is the managing editor of Decider.com. Visit it. It's right there on your internet. We'll take a quick break and then some news. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kim, thanks so much. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN, along with Rich Scheidner, longtime stand-up comedian and writer, author. He'll be appearing at Zany's in St. Charles tonight and tomorrow night. Rich, how are things? Good to talk to you again.
Good, Bill. How you doing?
Really good, thank you.
Hi, Rich. I want to know why you you used Kaja Gugu.
Well, any excuse to play Kaja Gugu, but too shy, Rich Scheidner. It all makes sense, Wendy.
Oh.
It all makes sense. Rich, is the attitude changing of the people who come to see stand-up comedy? I don't know if you read the papers, but things have been crazy the last couple of years. I don't know if you've seen this. Is the attitude a little different with the customer, the comedy store customer now?
Well, I mean, people complain about the political correct thing or in terms of politics. I don't do politics in my act anyway, but you know, years ago, you could make jokes about both sides. You can make jokes about the Democrats, Republicans, or how you want to put it, conservative liberals, and both sides would take a laugh there, but you can't do that anymore. I mean, you do one joke about one side, and they hate you for the rest of your show, and the other people are, then you do about them, and then everybody hates you. I mean, nobody has any tolerance anymore for that kind of thing, so you have to pick a side and then just develop an audience for that if you're going to do politics. I don't find any difference. I just talk about, you know, being married, and that really hasn't changed in about 5 billion years. So, you know.
And everyone can relate to that, and everyone who's married, right. I guess.
Yeah.
I hate that no one likes each other anymore. I really do. I hate that no one likes each other anymore. Everybody's so not civil to one another. I can't stand it.
Yeah, I don't know. That happened. I mean, my dad, you know, he was in politics way back, and him, you know, they all got along. They just all, Republicans and Democrats, they got along. I don't know what, you know, I don't know where it changed or what happened. I don't know, you know, it's just a different time. That's all I know. But the things I got to do, you know, I still got to go to Costco and get like 6,000 rolls of toilet paper.
That'll never stop.
My life hasn't changed, no matter who's the president. You know, I still got a honeydew list. You know, I still got to clean the leaves out of the gutter.
Yeah,
you know?
That's a sucky job.
Yep.
Hey, Rich, I got to ask you, do you start panicking when that giant package of toilet paper is about a quarter left? Because I send my husband out. It's like, no, you have to have a backup case of it.
That's so true. I do look at it. I go, you know, honey, we only have 15 rolls of
right.
towels left.
It's an emergency. Rich, why did you go into this? Oh, go on. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Why did you go into this originally? When you were a kid, what happened that you said, I think this will be my life. I think I'll just go from town to town and tell my stories. What happened?
I was in law school. I mean, it really was, you know. And, of course, their parents are happy because they're telling everybody, he's going to be a lawyer. And my family needs a lot of lawyers. There's a lot of criminal activity on one side of my family.
Oh.
So that side was really happy. They're like, oh, great, a defense. But but I was always funny in my and people who I grew up with, I mean, I didn't realize how funny it was always was. I mean, my dad loved comedy. He'd go see live shows, you know, Don Rickles. I mean, he had comedy albums, so I'd listen to him. And he, you know, it's sort of like that's what he wrote. He was always like a funny guy. I mean, I remember one time I was out drinking with my buddies. I was about 18 years old, and this really happened. I broke my foot in a bar, and you know they dropped me off in the morning, and I come in the door with a cast on my foot. I'm still hammered. I come stumbling in the door, and my dad's sitting there having breakfast. He's getting ready to go to work. He goes, "What happened, here, boy? What happened?" I go, "Well, I was dancing in a bar, and some guy came down on my foot and he broke it." My dad just goes, "Well, dance with women; they're lighter."
He's right.
I mean, he always had that kind of sense of humor. So I just, you know, but of course, when I said I was going to do comedy for a career, when I quit law school to do comedy, my dad, he didn't, there's nobody in showbiz in my family. So he just he would tell people I was captured by a religious cult. He said, I think I'm Mooney's guy.
That's easier for him to handle than you going to do stand up.
Yeah.
Far easier. What is the difference? I know you did most of the major talk shows, starting with Johnny Carson, and then you went through with Jay Leno and Letterman and stuff. In your head, Rich, are you thinking different things as you're approaching each of those sets, or is it kind of a similar pattern to all of them?
Well, you know, they're practiced. I mean, there's only one guy, you know, that Albert Brooks was the only guy I ever heard of who just wouldn't do stuff like make it up that day and then go do it on Tonight Show.
Yeah,
he was like this genius that way. But the rest of us, we just practiced. You know, they go, okay, come in and tell us what you want to do, and you come in and you tell them the 5 minutes. Then they'd approve it, and then you just would practice that for a couple of weeks. Every night you go to a club and you just practice doing that 5 minutes. And so there was no improv in that 5 minutes.
But the attitude was different. The audience was different. The attitude of the room was different between Letterman and Leno, and it was certainly Johnny Carson, right? You had to take that into account to some extent.
Between Johnny Carson and Letterman, absolutely, because it was a little edgier, so you do a little edgier stuff. I mean, it was just because it was like that hour later at night, and they would approve things that Johnny Carson wouldn't approve. Absolutely.
Were you aware when you made Johnny Carson laugh? Were you aware of it at the second, or did you have to pick up on that later when you'd watch it on tape?
No. And it was always that. This actually happened. You know, my dad never called me up. I did a bunch of Tonight Shows and Lettermans, and my mom would call me. My dad never did. You know, and then one night I was on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And they'd always tell me, I was one of those guys that sometimes I'd go to the couch and sometimes I wouldn't. They'd say, when you finish your set, I'd just look over to Johnny and he'd either wave me over to the couch or just give me the okay sign. I'd go back to the curtain.
Yeah.
So one night I'm doing this and I look over and he just gives me the okay sign. So instead of just turning and walking back the curtain, I backed out. I backed away from the audience like a gunfighter. I pulled my jacket back like it was like a gun, like I was like backing out of a saloon in an old western.
Yeah.
And Johnny starts laughing. I mean, I have the tape, and he starts laughing. And the camera goes to him, and Ed McMahon's going, "What's he doing?" And Johnny goes, "He's doing a gunfighter. It's great." And he's laughing. Right? Because I looked at the audience like I was wary, you know, like I didn't trust them, and I'm backing out. And my dad calls up the next day, goes, "You made Johnny laugh. You're great." I mean. You know what I mean? It's like
sure.
He was watching. He just couldn't give it up to me yet, you know?
Johnny loved comedy about gunfighters. If you did a Wyatt Earp bit to Johnny, that was gold. Yeah, you can't beat that.
It's so different when you get, some gratification of your parents liking what you've done. Doesn't it mean so much?
Yeah, it does.
Oh.
It does.
Well, there's psychology, you know? Rich, where they say that a lot of comedians are doing it just to get somebody on their side. Maybe they didn't get approval from their moms or their dads, so that's their second chance at it. Do you agree with that or disagree with it?
Well, I have a theory. I have a book called Kicking Through the Ashes that I wrote. It's all about my experience as a stand-up comic. And my theory is comics, it's a kind of extreme thing. I know a lot of funny people who never... When I was growing up, they never tried to go on stage like I did. I think you were either raised like a prince or a POW. You got a lot of approval, way so much approval when you're growing up. You know, everything you did, parents applauded, or you got none whatsoever, and you were treated, you know, like a dog, you know?
Yeah.
And so you go on stage because you're not going to get that kind of approval working in an office somewhere. You know, that. So you're a prince, you go on stage because you're getting what you naturally expect you should be getting. You're going to get that applause and that approval. And you're a POW, you're going on stage because you're looking for what you never got.
Yeah. There's something
so
to that.
I can always tell the difference between, by the way they handle applause at the end. You know, at the end, the prince can't get enough applause. They'll stand up there and bow until the audience finally gives it up and stands and applauds, right?
That's what I do.
The POW, man.
Yeah.
They slam that mic back into the stand and leave before the audience changes their mind.
Rich, whenever you do the road, you're working with comics that you've never met before. The only thing you have in common is that you both do stand-up comedy. So inevitably, the talk turns to who's the best at this, and the name Bill Cosby would always, always, always come up. Every comedian had this admiration for Bill Cosby. What do we do now? Can we still
write him a letter in jail? That's what we do now.
What do
I can't even believe that.
I totally look. I do this lecture on the history of stand-up comedy. I have all these funny stories, and I know the history of it. And you're right. You're absolutely right. He was one of those guys. I mean, I've saw him live a couple of times. I was backstage with him, and he would sit there and tell stories for 2 hours, then go out on stage and do another 2-hour show.
Jeez.
Comics had huge admiration for the guy, but not now. He's persona non grata. You can't ignore what comic does off stage, what they've done on stage. You just can't ignore it.
Right. Yep.
The guy's a criminal. He's a rapist. I mean, the end of the story.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this, too. He was so himself on The Cosby Show that it wasn't like he was playing a character. So he's just, that's who he is. So you're mad at The Cosby Show, Bill Cosby. You're mad at Bill Cosby.
You can't. Exactly. Comics, you may not like a singer, but you can. Singers can be a little bit nasty, and you kind of go, you'll put up a more prima donna stuff from a singer, right? Because they have that singing talent. But
yeah.
A comic, their whole goodwill is their likability. You have to like somebody to laugh at them. You all know somebody who tries to be funny. If you don't like them, you're not going to laugh at them.
That's so true. Rich Scheidner's our guest. He's performing at Zanies in St. Charles tonight and tomorrow. Go to zanies.com. All your ticket information is there. So when you talk about the greats, the same names always come up. It's always going to be Richard Pryor. It's always going to be George Carlin. It's always going to be Lenny Bruce. Who's not getting their due, Rich? Who should be up there that America just isn't considering one of the tops, but they should?
Right now?
Well, let's go all time. But
Phyllis
right now,
Diller.
You know, Phyllis Diller, says
Wendy. I loved
her.
Phyllis Diller was a friend of mine. I mean, I did my third Tonight Show, and she called me up 11 o'clock at night and said, "This is Phyllis Diller. I think you're great. You're fantastic. I'm going to have lunch with you and hang out." And I thought somebody was goofing on me. And I mean, really. And then she did that laugh. I said, "This is not Phyllis Diller." She goes, "Ah!" And did that laugh, you know. And I And she was the first female star stand-up.
Yeah.
And she did it in an era. And you got to look back. There were no women. Women weren't even allowed to be alone on stage until after World War II. They had to be in teams, like Burns and Allen. And she broke out. She broke out and became a star as a woman and got her foot in the door. And then she turned the whole thing and did like that anti-Betty Crocker back when women were just supposed to be in the kitchen cooking and cleaning. And she had jokes like, they say housework won't kill you, but why take the chance?
I loved her.
She was great.
Yep. All right, so Phyllis
Diller
should be.
She's one of the all-time greats, no doubt about it.
Yep. No question. Rich Scheider's his name. Go see him. He's at Zany's in St. Charles tonight and tomorrow night. Zany's.com has all the ticket information. And Rich, I know you were scheduled to be here live in studio, and I'm sorry things didn't play out. Because of the Kavanaugh hearing, we were expecting some sort of announcement sometime during this hour.
Sure.
But next time you're in town, for sure, we'll have you on, okay?
I enjoyed coming in with you guys, and I enjoyed talking to you.
Thanks, Rich. It's Rich Scheider. He's at Zany's in St. Charles. We'll take a quick break and then a little more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill and Wendy, and it's 720 WGN, thanks to Rich Scheidner. Yeah, he was supposed to come in. We didn't know originally when the confirmation results for Brett Kavanaugh was going to come in.
They said there was a possibility of an announcement during this hour.
12:30, our time.
Yeah. So it's since been altered a little bit, but we didn't want Rich to drive all the way in from St. Charles if he wasn't going to be on the air. Boy, were his tires tired.
Another comic that we had in here fairly recently, Sarah Colonna. There's something that we failed to mention with her when she was on the air, and she has put together these little stadium bags. If you go to clutchwomen.com, you can order... they're like little purses that are pre-measured because you can, especially in football stadiums, you're only allowed a certain number of inches by a certain number of inches to bring in. Mm-hmm. So you see people walking in literally with Ziploc bags with their stuff in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a big pain because there's no strap on the Ziploc bag.
Wow.
Like a shoulder strap?
She has fixed that.
She has. And they're stadium regulation size handbags for women. The only thing is she doesn't have Chicago Bears colors.
Oh.
I'm kind of bummed.
Which
but
teams
does she
are
make
feature?
One in green and gold?
Yeah, there's a Packer one.
All right.
Yeah.
Will you get it for me?
Yeah.
No. I can't do
so
it.
So how many of the teams are represented and not the Bears?
You got to go to clutchwomen.com.
That's a strange website name with all that's going on politically right now, by the way. I would have gone with a slightly different website, but that's just me.
Yeah, you got to go to the website because it's scrolling through and I can't determine what they have. But they have this, like, Sarah has this snakeskin black with either gold or silver hardware.
Oh.
And they're really cute. And I like to call these things a party fun bag because when I go to a concert or something, you don't want to have this big... bag on
no,
you.
No, of course not.
So these are tiny little things, party fun bags. You can bring them wherever you want. It matches the Blackhawks when I wear my sweater and the White Sox when I wear my jersey, so I didn't need the Bears colors.
Very nice. And she did this because her husband is a kicker, former kicker right now. He's looking for work. John Ryan has been a punter in the NFL for years.
The Seahawks holds a bunch of records currently.
Yeah.
And why is he not working?
Long story. She started to tell us nothing bad.
Oh.
It's just that a lot of teams are going for less expensive kickers.
Yeah, I guess. And he's been doing it quite a while.
He's been doing it for quite a while. So he was kind of in the upper price bracket. Speaking of both comedy and sports, I know you didn't watch the Cubs series against the Pittsburgh Pirates.
What's your magic number, Bill?
Right now it's 3. They're already in the playoffs as a wild card for sure, but you want to win that division so you don't have to have a one-game runoff. But I think you will like this about the Pittsburgh Pirates. They have a guy on the team named Kevin Kramer. They have a guy on the team named Kevin Newman. So there was a time where both Kramer and Newman were on the base paths for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
I love it.
It was fun.
So 4.5 by 6.5 inches, by the way, are the requirements to get into stadiums.
Oh, so it meets those requirements?
It's a little tiny. It's cute. So clutchwomen.com. Sarah Colonna is behind that. I also watched her Netflix show Insatiable.
Yeah.
It's really good.
It's fun to watch, yeah.
She had mentioned she plays the mom, and at first it's like, you don't want to play a mom. You want to be the sweet, sexy thing. She's a sweet, sexy mom in it.
Oh.
So insatiable. She's also an alcoholic, or a recovering alcoholic.
Her character is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Thank you for specifying.
We'll take a quick break. We'll find out what Steve has coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch.
And I just want to mention Dan Hampton will join the Steve Cochran Show on Monday at 7:10 with his wrap on the Bears-Bucks game, which is happening.
Yeah.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Kim Gordon from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.